Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Bill Henry.
World famous Bill Henry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. Bud?
Yeah, just saying, people are... But it's too bad people don't have no... Or, I mean, some people don't have no backstage pass.
How do you know they don't have a backstage pass?
Because, well, I mean, just some people.
Why? Because of what I was talking about?
Yeah, man, you're...
You were really on fire. I don't know whether it was good or bad, but you are...
Yeah, you're definitely... Yeah, man, yeah, sometimes you act pissed off, I don't know.
Well, I mean, we were talking about... You know, there's a lot of behind the scenes that happens, and we talk about that. I don't want to get into it, you see, because then people are angry at me because, well, why don't you talk about it on the air? Because I can't talk about it on the air. I can talk about it during our pre-show, which we do have at 9:15 Pacific, 12:15 Eastern, and it is on our videocast, Phil TV in HD, and a bunch of other stuff. But so what? You think I was out of line?
Well, I don't think you are out of line. I don't think you're out of line. I think you are pointed.
Right.
I think that you were,
Come on.
Will you just...
Bud, shut up, okay?
Yes, I think that you were.
Yes, that's what I'm doing. I'm carefully parsing my words, if you don't mind.
Yeah, I know, but sooner or later you gotta talk, don't you?
I am talking. God almighty... Do I have to start thinking about what I'm going to do to the two of these to shut them up this early? I'm asking you, Phil.
No, you do not. Guys, let her talk.
Hey.
As I was going to say, I think that you were very pointed. I think you were very, very sharp. I think some of your criticism might have been harsh. But at the same time, I think that you were honest.
Yeah, I think, too.
What? Why is he allowed to introduce the sort of the human equivalent of drool into what, you know?
All right, Bud, just let people finish a thought and then you can jump in.
I was agreeing with her.
Yes, I know you're agreeing with me, but your agreement does nothing more than befoul what I'm saying. You see?
No.
What I'm saying is I'll say something and then you say, okay. You do something... And it sounds, it's nothing more really, Bud, and God, you know, I do respect you, but it's nothing really more than spit up. You're not saying anything, you're spitting something up.
Well, I think that's devaluing. I think you should give him credit. They have an opinion.
I agree with you guys, but I also agree with Margaret. Let her finish what she's saying. Do you understand that we waste a lot of time at the beginning of every show giving you guys basic courtesy lessons, because you're butting in here, you're butting in there.
Yeah, I did say I agree that we're being able to say it.
Yeah, but I...
Well, Phil, deal with them.
He's making a point, though, Margaret.
Oh, now I'm... Daddy's going to lecture. Here we go.
No, Daddy's not lecturing. He's just... The point he is making is the following thing. If you can't abide someone simply saying, I agree with you, Margaret, then what's the point?
It isn't that he's butting in. I'm saying something that I think is well thought out. I am a well-spoken person. I think it has a certain rhythm and musicality to what I'm saying. And as I say it, then he comes in and you hear... And Frank is the one that brought up the spit-up analogy. He said it sounds... like what that tastes like. I don't quite... I wish I could tell...
What do you mean it sounds like what that tastes like?
You know when people say I can taste throw up? When I talk and then Bud talks. It's the speech equivalent of the... I don't...
Yeah, let's... Okay.
Yes, he's saying that what I'm saying is throw up. That's what you're saying.
Well, essentially, yes.
Well, that's a little harsh, you know. Let him have his, you know, as the Desiderata said, that great poem.
Yes, which Les Crane recorded. It became a top 40 hit, yes.
All right, fine. It said, even the dull and the ignorant, they too have their story.
Who's that?
Never mind.
Well, what does that mean?
What it means is that in life, everybody has a lesson to teach, and we can learn from the dull and the ignorant, even as much as we can from the people that we think are wise. You know, I mean, that's a nice line from that Desiderata. This is a thing, I don't know if you guys ever heard it, and I don't know what it is. And maybe now you know what it is, but back in when I was in high school, it actually became a top 40 or top 30 hit record on the rock and roll station we'd listen to, you know. Because back in those days, CHR, if you listened to Kiss in L.A., if you listened to Z100 in New York, if you listened to, you know, Y100 in Miami, any of the big top 40 stations, what we used to call top 40, they're called Contemporary Hits Radio now. That's what we heard. That's what we would listen to. And anything that made it into the top 30 would make it onto the radio. And there was a guy by the name of Les Crane, who had been a radio announcer. He'd been a talk show host, I think.
I don't know anything about it. Frank said he thought he'd heard him doing one of the talk shows. Yeah.
All right. But Les Crane also had a late night show that they tried to go up against Johnny Carson. It's very interesting. There's two periods that I distinctly remember where they tried to knock Johnny Carson off the pedestal on the late night thing. Two distinct periods that I remember. The first was in the late 1960s. Carson had just taken over The Tonight Show and was a smash hit right out of the gate. And by the late 60s, CBS and ABC tried to take him down, and they did so respectively with Merv Griffin on CBS and Joey Bishop on ABC.
Joey? You're kidding. Joey Bishop of...
Who's Joey Bishop?
Joey Bishop was a very famous comic and was part of the Rat Pack and was one of the guys that hung with Sinatra and Dean Martin, was an actor and a comic, and had his own TV show. I think he had a sitcom, The Joey Bishop Show, for a while. But they tried it with Joey Bishop, and his announcer, by the way, his sidekick, his Ed McMahon, was Regis Philbin.
Oh, now I remember, yes.
Yeah. And then... replacing Joey Bishop for a while was Les Crane. Well, that didn't work. And then the second era of trying to knock Johnny Carson off was in the early 90s when they had Pat Sajak and they brought on Rick Dees and then we had Fox with Arsenio Hall. Arsenio Hall had a very popular show, but it didn't quite, you know. But anyway, Les Crane recorded this Desiderata, and it's a poem. And it was, and his voice is so beautiful, and the way he read it, and it's all about, you know, how to go through life. You know.
What do you mean, how to go through life? You talk about a poem?
A poem, yeah, yeah. Seriously, a poem. I guess it was an early example of, well, I don't want to call it hip-hop, but it was a spoken word recitation with music behind it, and...
You mean The Americans?
The what?
The Americans, the one that was done by the Canadian.
No, not The Americans. I know that one. No.
I don't know. What is it called?
The Desiderata. Look it up. And it has these beautiful lines. And one of the lines in it was, even the dull and the ignorant, they too have their story. That's all I wanted to say. All right. It's time now to hear from the dull and the ignorant. I'm kidding. It's time now to hear from...
No, man, are you kidding me? They're the sponsors.
I'm not talking about our sponsors. Of course, we appreciate and love more than you'll ever know. The Dull and the Ignorant was a comment about Jeff Dowder, which I will defer. And the reason why we're going to hear from Jeff Dowder on the show tonight is because the supersonic space jump has been aborted. Felix Baumgartner, who was going to jump out of a craft of some kind at the edge of space, has been aborted. He was going to dive from the edge of space. Felix Baumgartner attempted to make history by being the first human to attempt a supersonic space jump. Unfortunately, the Austrian's attempt was aborted due to winds. According to an October 9th report from Space Travel, which is a website that they refer to, if the weather cooperates, Felix Baumgartner may attempt his record-breaking supersonic space jump later this week. It all depends on Mother Nature, though. Unfortunately, Wednesday is not an option, but Thursday could end up being the day. The jump was supposed to take place at 120,000 feet above New Mexico. Unfortunately, the winds were too strong.
Now, wait a minute. Let me get this straight. He is going to jump from 120,000 feet?
God, you're kidding me!
No, exactly, yeah.
And what is the purpose of this?
Well, nobody's ever done it. Like, you know...
Well, no, what do you mean nobody's ever done it? Look, Robert, no one's ever eaten a skill saw while it's plugged in and turned on. You realize that?
Don't be flippant talking like that.
What do you mean by that?
Well, no one's ever done that.
This isn't eating a skill saw while it's plugged in and turned on. This is the extension of something that man already does. Man jumps from high places using all kinds of apparatus, various tools and skills to help us survive those jumps. That's the whole point of these things, to do these things and survive. See?
Well, what is it? Who's it going to benefit? Are we going to use this in the military?
Who knows? Maybe. Maybe it'll teach pilots who fly at ever higher altitudes how to survive being ejected from an aircraft or a spacecraft, for that matter, if something goes wrong. Maybe this is the beginning of learning to survive some kind of a high altitude jump. What about spacecraft that are launched and fail at that altitude? You know.
Yeah, the people on the Challenger and everything, they'd have been able to do it.
Well, I don't know if that's the case, man.
Why not?
Well, because the Challenger was, you know, as they said, it was a catastrophic failure. All right, let's take a break.
Well, you can say that again, a catastrophic failure. There's no way they're going to jump out of something like that.
No one's saying the Challenger. I'm just saying. These are things that we become interested in these things, and then we think, hey, this applies to this, or this applies to that. We find areas where suddenly all of this becomes applicable, and we further our investigation. I think it's very exciting. We'll talk more about it with Jeff Dowd, and we come back in the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Jump from 100...
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Jeff Dowder on the line with us from Caltech in Pasadena, California. Jeff is a part-time professor of mechanical physics. How are you tonight, Jeff?
I'm doing good, Phil, and how's everybody out there?
Good, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm good.
Hello.
Hi, Ms. Gray, right?
Yes, and I'm looking forward to talking with you. Are you a doctor?
No, ma'am. I'm just a professor of mechanical physics, which is a discipline that is pretty specific to me and what, you know, I don't really want to get into it because it's...
No, we're not here to talk about that, but we are here to talk about this space jump, Jeff. Attempted, or that was going to be attempted, and they called it off by Felix Baumgartner. Do you know who, first of all, do you know who this guy is?
Well, yeah, Felix Baumgartner is a sky driver. He's a sky diver from Austria. He's also a base jumper.
What's a base jumper?
Well, base jumper is somebody who jumps from elevated areas like plateaus or from mountaintops or things that are on the earth but are not in an aircraft, you know, are not flying, you know, which is obviously a mountain's not flying, so I probably don't have to qualify it that way, but just want to be sure that people know that it's not flying, you know, through the air when you're
So they're jumping off of topographical points, earthbound points.
Yeah, that's correct. And you do see a lot of base jumpers using a variety of apparatus, a variety of jumping equipment. There are different kinds of chutes and different kinds of jumping suits too. There's a lot of them call a flying squirrel, you know, like a squirrel costume, a flying squirrel costume. And
What is a flying squirrel costume?
Well, yeah, this is a suit that looks, when the arms and the legs are extended, the base jumper looks very much like a squirrel on the go, you know, or not a squirrel on the go, but you know,
like a flying squirrel.
Yeah, I know, like a squirrel. But I'm very loath to use the term flying squirrel because you immediately get giggles and snickers and stuff. People are saying, you know, what are you like, Rocky and all that, you know?
Yeah.
So what I try to say is it's a squirrel. It's a squirrel in motion. you know?
Well, it seems to me that's almost the same kind of a silly term, you know?
No, I think it's descriptive, too.
That's more descriptive to you than flying squirrel?
Yeah, because if he said flying squirrel, I'd think about Rocky.
Okay, so we don't need to belabor that too much.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying that you do see those kinds of suits. And Felix Baumgartner is an Austrian, guy that does squirrel on the move, and or not squirrel on the move, but he does a base jump, and he also does the skydiving.
So let's talk here, Professor, about this supersonic space jump. It has been aborted, and it has been aborted because of winds. And let me just get to the story here. I was reading it just before the break. If weather cooperates, Felix Baumgartner may attempt his record-breaking supersonic space jump. It all depends on Mother Nature, though. Unfortunately, Wednesday's not an option, but Thursday could end up being the day.
Yeah, they're hopeful that they will have winds that cooperate, because you can well imagine if you are jumping from any altitude, it doesn't matter really what the high winds are going to be hazardous, because you're prone to being not only blown off course, which is the first consideration or most obvious consideration, but also damage to equipment. All you have to do is talk to any skydiver that has jumped in particularly at a particularly high velocity or in a high velocity wind, and you can very easily lose vital pieces of equipment, gloves, boots, whatever, and that could certainly endanger you. So that's that. You know, that's consideration. But the other thing about this jump is, I think it's a little kind of cockeyed. It's not. I don't think he's really taking into consideration a couple of things. First of all, he's not really jumping from space. He's jumping from 120,000 feet. That is technically still stratosphere. And
What is the significance of that?
Well, the significance is that's not exactly an honest statement to the public by, you know, Mr. Baumgartner, because of the fact that in outer space, first of all, if he's jumping from outer space, obviously you're not jumping. If you're in outer space, you're weightless. So he's not jumping from outer space. Okay? Number two.
Yeah, well, no, we understand that, Mr. Doubter, but what I'm asking you is this. I know he's not jumping from, quote-unquote, outer space, but my understanding was that he was jumping from somewhere near the edge of space. That is the end of the Earth's atmosphere, Phil?
Yeah, that I think that's a fair way of saying it.
What does that mean about Earth's atmosphere?
What I'm saying is that...
Here, hold on, Bud. What we're talking about...
No, if I could, Mr. Henry.
Go ahead.
The Earth has atmosphere, okay? The Earth has atmosphere. Yeah, yes, okay, the Earth has atmosphere. But there is a point where that atmosphere runs out, and we are on the edge of space. Okay, well, the thinnest part of that is the ionosphere, and then come space.
Well, is the ionosphere space?
The ionosphere is technically not space, but it is the highest, thinnest level of the Earth atmosphere before you're in full space mode. But he's not jumping from the ionosphere. He's jumping from the high stratosphere.
And all right, so the high stratosphere is what?
Well, I mean, there's still, for instance, in a high stratosphere, you still have some cloud formation. There is thin, albeit very thin, levels of oxygen. There is, in point of fact, atmosphere.
Well, does it look like space? Is the sky darker?
Well, if you were to look straight up, you would see the edges of what we call space. That is the lack of particle, an atmospheric particle, which therefore the sun cannot reflect off of, and so therefore you do get the darkness of space because there is no matter, you know. But I used to say it doesn't matter if there's no matter, you know, as some I say in my class, you know. And
pretty, you know, like, because they're not the matter.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, no matter, not like antimatter. No, man, I'm not talking about antimatter. I'm talking about, what's that?
That's music. Go ahead.
I'm not talking about antimatter. I'm talking about matter. And
all right, let's get back to Professor Doubter here in a moment as he talks about Felix Baumgartner's aborted supersonic space jump. I think it's fascinating, don't you?
I do think it's that. I still don't know the purpose of this, and I still want to find out what he means by space and the what he called squirrel or squirrel in motion.
Squirrel in motion? Never mind about that, believe me.
No, I'm not going to mind.
Phil
what?
Hendry.
I'm going to mind about the squirrel. Oh, never mind.
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Jeff, go ahead. We're looking at a videotape of a jump that Felix Baumgartner did in July, right, Professor Doubter?
Yeah, this is Felix Baumgartner. You're looking here. He's got the standard swing chute, and this is him coming down after a jump that he did in July, and that was the 18 mile, what they call an 18 mile jump, and that was in July. Now, the one he's proposing now, 18 miles above the planet Earth, is a long way up, I can assure you. I'm trying to just doing some rough mathematics. It's about 96,000 feet above the planet of Earth. The one that, obviously, the one, you know, that we're living on now is, you know.
Professor, this is Margaret Gray.
Yes, Margaret, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I still would love to address this topic of whether he's in outer space. Secondly, you have made this point about a squirrel in motion, and am I?
Yeah, that's not a big deal.
Right, that's not really no big deal. I mean, this is something that I, you know.
And one other thing, well, I don't. You're saying that's no big deal. Your grammar is very unusual for a professor.
Yeah, because that's just the way he talks.
And what are you? Are you his press agent? I don't...
All right, hold on. Jeff, you're a rather non-traditional professor, wouldn't you say?
My world is mechanics, physics. My world is motion. My world is the insurmountable obstacle versus the irrepressible force. And that's my world. That's where I'm at. You know, this is where I'm at. You know, so if I don't talk with the best English, please I apologize. But my world, you know, where I'm at is more about these matters we're discussing here.
Okay, I understand. All right, so let's get back to this space jump. Felix Baumgartner, he's a 43-year-old Austrian skydiver. He did not jump today, but you're saying it's not a very honest jump anyway, that he has to get much higher.
Yeah, if he's going to do a space jump, and I mean he's really going to do a space jump, then he has to contemplate really what we are preparing, and I'm not a part of this, but I am assisting in preparations for Toby Bowe and his team.
Now, Toby Bowe, is this guy a friend of yours?
Well, yeah, but I mean, what I would ask you to do, Mr. Hendry, is give it a little bit more of a respectful way of saying it.
I'm sorry.
Well, no, I mean, is this guy a friend of yours? It makes it sound like we just came up with the idea while we were...
Well, it does sound... May I finish that sentence?
Which sentence?
Well, it does sound like you came up with the idea while you were, forgive me, blasting up.
Well, I mean, no, we didn't come up with the idea while we were blasting up. I mean, it's not like two guys are sitting fat, smoking a fat, you know, thumb-size joint. I mean, the space jump is something people have been wanting to do for hundreds of years. You know,
for hundreds of years.
Yes, sir. I mean, it sounds unusual.
I would think that the space jump would be something that dates at least from the age of flight and not before.
Well, no. I mean, if you think about it, people have wanted to be up in the air flying, or if they can't fly, jumping out. Well, yeah, I mean, they do want to fly. They don't want to die, but people wanted to jump. Like the first mountain that someone ever saw, they wanted to go on top.
Yeah, they want to go on top and jump off it.
Well, how do you know that they wanted to go on top of it and jump off of it? What I am trying...
Now, I think it's only logical to assume that if you're a human and you look at a big, high mountain and you go, man, I'd like to go the way up top, and then you finally go way up top and you stand there and you look on a view, you probably want to say, oh, yeah, man, I'd like to jump off this mountain right now, but I can't do it because guess what? Then I'm going to die, and what would that do? So, you know... So I think that
the supersonic, let's just forget about how long man wants to go ahead and continue your thought. I think we're getting sidetracked here.
Yeah. So anyway, Toby Bow and his crew. Yeah, he's a friend of mine. Yeah, we went to high school together. And yes, Ms. Gray, to your point. Yeah, we as young people, and I don't want to comment no more. We smoked weed and or. What have you? I mean, I'm not denying none of that, but it's got nothing to do with what we're saying.
Exactly. Let's move past that. You know.
Well, I'm only curious because it doesn't sound like it's very well thought out.
Why? Because we're a couple of heads that live in Mid Canyon.
I have no idea where you live.
All right. Well, I mean, that's what it is. We're a couple of heads that live in Mid Canyon.
Okay, fine. Let's talk about Mr. Bowes.
Well, it is a captain. I should have said...
Captain Bow? What branch of the service?
I didn't know that we were going to get into a lot of this different...
But he's a captain, so is he in the Navy? Is he in the Air Force?
He is not in the service, Mr. Henry. We refer to him respectfully as Captain Bow.
He's not in the service, but you just call him Captain Bow.
Yes, ma'am. And I think in this case, in this sense, it is a far more appropriate... calling him Captain, then Captain Kangaroo got called Captain, and I'm not comparing what Toby Bow done.
All right, I understand. It's
See, this is why I asked about whether you two were sitting under a tree one day at school with your backpacks on, smoking, as the kids call it, a fatty.
No, ma'am, we were not.
All right. But that's why I said what I said.
All right, let's move on. I don't care to know about any of this other stuff. What happened? There is Professor Dowder. What I want to find out is Felix Baumgartner is planning on jumping on Thursday, I believe. They say the winds will be much more manageable, or at least they will be able to manage in these winds. Now, you say this is not an honest jump. Tell me specifically, he's not jumping from space? What is he not doing?
He's not jumping from space. Yeah, he's not jumping from space. He's not jumping from space. And that's, I've tried to say it over and over. I keep trying to tell people, but they won't listen. You got to jump from space if it's going to be a space jump. I mean, that's pretty preliminary. You know, sort of.
Yeah, that's the basic.
Sounds like a basic thing you got to do if you're going to do a space jump.
Yeah. You got to do... Yeah.
All right, so we know that they have to jump from space. Why is he not jumping from space? Where is he jumping from that makes it that he's not jumping from space?
He's jumping from an area that's not space. It's ionosphere. When Toby Bow does it, and we're planning on making our jump in late January or early February of 2013... And we're going to do it from an altitude of almost 200,000 feet. Now that is, you know for a fact, you're in outer space. You're not going to go up there going, wow, am I in space? Am I not? I don't know. Let's just roll the dice on this. You'll know for a fact. And when Captain Bow, or Mr. Bow, if you want to call him, I don't care. I call him Captain Bow out of respect for what he's going to do.
Yeah, but he's not a captain in any service. I want the audience to know that.
Well, you know, Mr. Henry, yes, he is. He's a captain in the service of doing a space, you know, of the space jump. I mean...
He's a captain in the service of the squirrel in motion.
No, that's... Okay, man, you can laugh all you want, man, but guess what? When we go up to do the space jump, guess who will... I was thinking about inviting you, you know?
Well, yeah, really?
Yeah, I was, but...
All right, can we... This is beginning to sound like it's a little half-baked.
What do you mean half-baked?
It sounds like you guys did come up with this. Margaret asked the question, like, you, did you come up with this while you were out back blasting up or smoking a fatty or whatever the hell it was you were doing? It doesn't sound like it's a bona fide operation or a mission or whatever you guys call it.
Mr. Henry, this is very real, and it's very real. He's going to go up in a hot air balloon in a pressurized capsule to 200,000 feet. He'll step out of that at 200,000 feet and plummet down to the Earth, just shy of being in space. And
will he be, what kind of a spacesuit, or not a spacesuit, what kind of a pressurized suit will he wear?
Well, I mean, we are thinking about the Squirrel in Motion, and I never did call it that.
What is it? Is that the one that is shaped like the flying squirrel?
Yeah, but I told you not to say that, because now people are thinking about the... God.
Yeah, everybody's now thinking about Bullwinkle.
I don't care about Bullwinkle. I want to know, is he wearing, though, the flying squirrel suit?
Yeah, he's wearing what we call, he's wearing the squirrel on the go, yeah.
Who cares if it's squirrel on the go or squirrel in motion? Who cares if it's flying squirrel? Who cares if they think about Rocky or Bullwinkle? The fact is, this guy, Toby Bo, Captain Bo, in January, according to you, is going to be jumping out of a hot air balloon pressurized capsule at close to 200,000 feet.
Well, it's going to be higher than what Baumgartner, the only thing about Baumgartner, as I like to say, only about Baumgartner, he's going to be a big bomb. He's going to bomb all right, because he's not going to be even anywhere near the outer space regions. And what we're going to do, yes, sir, we will.
Okay, is he going to be at 200,000 feet?
That's what I'm trying to find out.
Is he going to be at 200,000 feet in what sense?
In the sense that he's jumping out of this capsule.
He's not jumping out of the cap? What do you mean?
The capsule he's jumping out of.
The capsule that he is going to jump from.
Yeah, okay.
Is he jumping at 200,000 feet?
What do you mean, is he jumping at 200,000 feet?
Isn't that what you just said?
I said that he's going to be on the edge of space.
Didn't you use the figure 200,000?
I did, yes.
Okay, is that the number, is that the elevation that he is going to be jumping from?
Who?
Took this...
Oh, my God.
What?
Toby Bo... Captain Bo.
Captain Bo is jumping where?
He's... Didn't you tell me that he is jumping?
Yeah, he's jumping. I mean, we're all jumping. It's getting down to the wire now.
I'm talking about you guys jumping out of a capsule.
Us guys?
Him, I mean. Him.
Yeah.
Okay, is he jumping at 200,000 feet?
I don't know. I mean, I sometimes they jump at above 200,000. I don't know. Are you asking, is it going to be exactly 200,000?
Is he going to? Yes, is it going to be jumping at exactly 200,000?
How can you tell?
How can you tell? Do you have an altimeter in that capsule?
It's not my altimeter.
Does he have an altimeter in that capsule?
Yes, sir, he does.
Okay, when he gets to 200,000 feet on that altimeter, okay?
Yes, sir.
Is he going to jump?
Is he going to jump if the altimeter says 200,000 or if we're actually at 200,000? That's all I'm trying to figure out.
Oh, boy.
Don't you understand what he's saying?
Hey, man, don't yell at me. I'm the guy that's being with Toby Bo or Cat. I'm going to be there, man. You're not going to be there because you're all laughing and everything like that.
Yeah, but we're saying is he going to jump 200,000 feet or isn't he?
Well, Mr. Henry's not being clear.
Yes, I am. I'm being completely clear.
If Mr. Henry, you're saying, is he going to jump at 200,000 feet? And you asked me if he's got an altimeter. Those are two different stories. That's a whole different... They don't even, I mean, one, yeah, it has to do with elevation. Another has to do with jumping. And, yeah, you are jumping, but one's an altimeter.
I'm asking you, he's looking at an altimeter waiting to get to 200,000 feet. Is that what he's doing?
Well, he's not looking at it.
Is somebody on his crew, is someone on his team, are you looking at the altimeter?
Yes, sir.
Okay, there's a yes.
Well, congratulations. Hey.
Don't be so sarcastic.
Shut up.
Don't tell me.
All right, hold on. So now you're looking at the altimeter. It's 200,000 feet. When he sees that, does he open the door and step out?
You don't just open the door and step out, man. It's not like you're committing suicide. First, you got to strap on your...
Okay, I got to take a break.
Well, you have far more patience than me.
You understand? I know what he's saying. You can't know If you're at 200,000 feet, how do you know you're 200,000 feet just because the altimeter says so? It may be broken.
Yeah, what if it's broken?
Then I guess it's broken and you're not at 200,000 feet. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Henry Show with Jeff Dowder on the space jump, the aborted space jump.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Jumped out. That's what I was saying that time.
Well, you were talking, and we're back with Professor Jeff Dowder, from Professor of Mechanical Physics. You were talking about a jump that obviously was a malfunction, and someone died.
Well,
you're telling me they think he died. It sounds to me like he died.
Yeah, well, they just didn't find no evidence of it, is what I was trying to say to you. That was the jump that we talked about when Dave Buck and Jerry Gordonelli had been jumping up a Lake Elsinore and were attempting the early vertical stages of a space jump. Anyway, it was Jerry Gordonelli, it wasn't Dave Buck, it was Jerry Gordonelli who suggested that they ladder it up another 20,000 feet. So at that point, they did go to 70,000. You know, Baumgartner, he'd done 80,000. Now, Baumgartner is, I'm sure, a well-traveled skydiver, but he's not even. It sounds to me like he's just going to butcher this thing left and right because he just. I looked at some of his equipment, and I looked at him, and I don't see it, you know.
Well, what don't you see?
Well, it all looks really, you talk about thrown together. I mean, that to me, it looks thrown together. What we're going to do with Toby Bowe come January at the Flats, and...
Now, where are the Flats?
Well, it's an area of the lower California desert near the Arizona border. It's a very... spacious and wide open, you know, area. But this guy Baumgartner, who is from Austria, he doesn't even know, man, because he comes from a country that is very mountainous. There's not a lot of places to jump, and so he's been working mostly in the States. And the width and the light and the space of the American desert is just going to blow. It'll put the zap on his head. You know,
what does that mean?
What do you mean, put the zap on his head? What? Yes, what does that mean?
What?
What do you mean, put the zap on his head?
I mean, he's going to be up there looking down and going, there's too much light, too much space. I come from a country where there's mountains.
Yeah, and he'll just put the zap on him.
Put the zap on him.
Yeah, he will become disoriented, in other words.
All right, let's get to the... you were saying that you were out at Lake Elsinore and you thought you'd ladder it up to 70,000 feet. We're talking about when Joe Gordonelli...
Yeah, Joe Gordonelli went up to 70,000 feet, all right? And he did what we call a step-off. That's what you were referring to. And there is a step-off. That's when you just, in a very relaxed way, you don't make a big thing of it because psychologically you want to be... You want your psychology to be, or your mindset to be... calm so that they can register accurate blood pressure. So you're talking to people, you might be having some soup or chewing some gum or looking at a magazine, and then you just wave and you walk out the door into open space and fall. And excuse me. And
now what is that supposed to do?
Well, I just said it.
You said I'm you said that the man needs to have his blood pressure.
Yeah, his blood pressure has to be registered normal. So when you do a step off, you step out of the capsule like it's no big deal, like you're not setting some altitude record and there aren't a million people watching you on the ground. You're chewing gum, you know.
You said you're looking at a magazine?
Yeah. I mean, when Joe Gordonelli did 50,000 feet, I shouldn't say, but he had a Playboy. And the reason why he had Playboy is just he was looking at a Playboy, And he looked up, looked at his watch, and put the magazine down and said, I'm going out for a smoke, and stepped out. All of that is very carefully strategized so that your body temperature and your body fluids and your, and your...
All right, so anyway, what happened to Joe Gordinelli?
That sounds like the most asinine story I've ever heard in my life.
Well, I'm sorry it doesn't, you know, it doesn't comport with your view of reality, ma'am. But that's what happened.
So what happened to Gordinelli?
What?
What happened to this guy, Joe Gordinelli?
Well, yeah, I'm sorry, Mr. It was Captain Gordinelli.
Okay, Captain. Was he also a captain of space jumping, or was he a captain in the military?
Well, I don't think being disrespectful...
Well, this is asinine. Was he a cap? You said he was a captain like Captain Kangaroo.
No, I didn't say he was a captain like Captain Kangaroo. I said if Captain Kangaroo was a captain, then you better believe that Joe Gordinelli and Toby Bo are captains, because they're captains of something that's a captain, okay? The guy's jumping on down, well.
All right, he's a captain.
Thank you.
Okay, so what happened?
All right, we got to 70,000 feet. He looked at his watch. He said, I'm going for a smoke. He stepped out, but the chute malfunctioned. Now, the reason why we're not sure whether he died or whether he is, you know, in some other state is because they only found his suit and his helmet. In fact, they found everything that he had on, but they didn't find him.
Well, like I said to you at the time, Jeff, maybe he just disintegrated. The speed was so great.
Well, I mean, there wasn't even there'd be a puddle or something.
Are you saying there was no absolutely no evidence of a man?
There was no evidence of a man being that fell out of a space.
We are at the shores of the El Pacifico here tonight. If you're watching us on Phil TV and HD, first of all, thank you. Thank you for being with us and being a part of our Backstage Pass family. If you're not, you should get a Backstage Pass and have access to thousands of hours of classic radio audio going back over a decade, over 4,500 hours, including, of course, our video casts, including our most recent offering, which is a year's worth of our Saturday night show, our local Los Angeles Saturday night show that we have archived not only the audio but the video casts as well, and so much more at philhenryshow.com. Also dropping this very day, we're still on Pacific time here, or it's actually, I should say, it's still Tuesday. Dropping today was episode 47 of the Free Phil Henry Podcast featuring Margaret Gray. Margaret, you are in this one. You want to tell people what it's about?
Well, this is one, this was a fun, it wasn't fun, it was an interesting one. It did turn into something that was fun. This was, I'm trying to remember now, Phil.
Well, I can't, I guess we'd have to pull the site up, you know.
What, you don't know?
I'm like you, I have
I can look it up if you want.
No, hold on, I'm asking Phil, you don't know the free podcast that I'm featured on. Oh, boy.
Well, yeah, now I do.
Thank you. Good Lord.
Margaret, I got a lot to think about, okay? I'm getting a podcast out every day. Every day a free podcast so people, more and more people, will be aware of our great website and the marvelous, wonderful things that we have to offer. The automatic laughs. Do you realize that the laughs that you get on our website more per capita than anywhere else in the history of the world? That's right. We probably cure cancer with our website. That's how many laughs we give people. So excuse me if I don't remember.
Well, isn't the... Hold on.
Yeah, way to go, Henry.
Way to go, Phil. That was just gorgeous.
In any event, the podcast features Margaret Gray as she was out, and you'll remember, wearing a Ronald Reagan mask.
Oh, now I do. Yes, that was... I think we did some good work for John Kerry that day.
Yeah, do you really? Because it was in the middle of Ronald Reagan's funeral.
Oh, quit making a big deal. It was not his funeral. It was a memorial. His funeral was held. It was in Washington.
No, it was not. It was held here. The memorial was in Washington. The Capitol is where the body of former President Reagan lay in state. But it was certainly not the... In any event, it's Margaret, and she's wearing a Reagan mask and a three-piece suit, handing out John Kerry literature at the Ronald Reagan Observance. And it's right there. It's episode 47 of our free Phil Hendry podcast. Tomorrow, we will feature Ted Bell as he talks about allowing his 4-year-old or his 10-year-old daughter to drive his Mercedes because he was too embarrassed to drive a Mercedes E-Series himself. So he hid in the back seat while his 10-year-old daughter drove it.
That is absolutely irresponsible.
Man, that is the funniest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, I heard it. It's pretty funny.
Oh, you think that's funny, huh?
It's modestly amusing. We'll let people judge for themselves. It's episode 48 tomorrow of the free Phil Hendry podcast. All right, folks, we do have with us Bobby Dooley and Steve Dooley. They're going to join us this hour as we discuss. The San Francisco sheriff is in a little bit of hot water. I don't know if you want to call it hot water, but the San Francisco sheriff, there's been some controversy surrounding the sheriff up there, and I'll tell you what it is. Apparently, it involves domestic abuse. His name is Sheriff Ross Mirkarimi. The San Francisco Board of Supervisors is squabbling over what to do with this man. They are trying to figure out whether to remove him from office over a domestic violence case involving his actress wife. His actress wife is Elena Lopez. Do you know who she is, Margaret?
I've never heard of her.
All right, but I mean, that's, you know, she's obviously a...
I've never heard of her.
Okay, but that's a little disrespectful, isn't it?
Why is that disrespectful?
Well...
Phil, I've never heard... Just because you call yourself an actress doesn't mean I've got to fall to my knees and put on my lipstick and gargle and get ready.
Whatever that means.
Well, I think you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean, Ms. Gray.
Thank you, bud.
Okay, well, isn't that nice?
Oh,
in any event, Ross Mirkarimi, it would take at least 9 votes from the 11-member board to oust Mirkarimi, who was elected last fall and mired in controversy before his swearing-in ceremony. 5 board members currently are campaigning to keep their jobs. With a little more background on this is Bobby and Steve Dooley joining us from the Western States Homeowners Association. We do thank them very much for being with us. And Bobby and Steve, how are you guys tonight?
We're doing well, Phil. Thank you for having us on.
So tell me what this is and what the extent of this domestic violence is. I think it's a case that draws our attention because obviously an elected official and one who is a sheriff should not have any hint of any violence about his person, especially toward his wife.
Well, this is where I think the interpretation of domestic violence, or what you might call domestic violence, as opposed to a husband and wife setting parameters. That's what I think is going on here, and that's why I think there is a misunderstanding. Sheriff Mirkarimi apparently had asked his wife to have a more of a smiling countenance, or to have a more pleasant countenance when photographers were around. When you look at the picture in today's Examiner, I think it's in the San Francisco Examiner, you see that the two of them are smiling. If you see that, Phil?
I have the fax copy, yeah.
Yes, Bobby?
Hi, Margaret.
I've got the copy. They are both smiling, but that is a picture that was taken today.
Right. Well, that's my point. In other words, the picture that was taken today is of Elena Lopez, the actress wife of Sheriff Mirkarimi. Is that right, Steve?
Yeah, that's Sheriff Mirkarimi. And the wife would be Elena Mirkarimi, but it's Lopez.
Yes, because that's her stage name.
I understand.
So she's smiling, Margaret, to answer your question, because obviously the point's been made.
All right, that's what I wanted to know, because she's obviously smiling. That means they've had the discussion about smiling in public.
That is correct. And the discussion they had, Margaret, obviously involved what was interpreted as domestic violence. Now, let me, if I could, go into this a little bit further, because my husband and I have been involved in this kind of, as we call it, the setting of limits, the setting of parameters. when Steve had asked me at one point in our marriage if I would have dinner on the table at a certain time, and I didn't find that unreasonable because I felt that a man who works very, very hard, and my husband does manual labor, he has a wildly successful landscaping business, they should be entitled to have their dinner on the table. If you agree to that parameter, then you subsequently agree to the corrective parameters. And
I know what you mean. And so, if I could ask you, what time was he expecting dinner?
My husband wanted dinner on the table at 7.
All right.
So that when dinner was not on the table at 7, then the second level of those corrective parameters kicked in. And that's when Steve was allowed to take me by the shoulders to smile at me, because we know that it is out of love, and to very quickly bring his hand across my face. This is a corrective parameter.
So to slap you?
Well, it is a slap, but it is a corrective parameter based upon my acquiescence.
Yes, and Phil, I think what Bobby's saying, and what a lot of women don't understand, and what a lot of men don't understand, once you have acquiesced to this,
yes.
Once you have acquiesced to this, then the corrective parameter, you understand, is done of love, and it is done swiftly, it is done sharply, so that there is a sting from the slap, but it is done with love, it is done with a smile.
All right, but he's slapping you. But that's what your husband did?
No, I did that, Mr. Henry, but done out of love.
He said it's done out of love. And to bring it to the present time and to bring it up to Elena Lopez's case, when Sheriff Mercurini said to her, I want you to smile when we are in public because there's liable to be lots of cameras, that was done, I am almost certain, with the corrective parameter and agreement.
Yes, so in other words, Phil, he said to her, you understand that there is going to be a corrective parameter. In their case, it might have been a punch. I don't know.
That's what I understood it to be, yeah.
So
a punch. A punch.
Right, but can we just hold on before you react? So that when he said to her, you did not smile, there were photographers there, you didn't smile, he is holding her by the shoulders, he's smiling.
Right, and then probably in that instance, Margaret, his right hand is cocked back in a fist, and he follows through.
Yeah, so they follow through with a punch. That means he goes right through. You follow through, that means you go through the punch.
All right, if I understand you, going through the punch means that his hand is cocked.
Well, I don't see anything funny about it.
I don't either.
I don't see anything funny about it either until I begin to think about this guy cocking his hand back because she didn't.
Well, Phil, there are millions of American women who have avoided the downside of domestic abuse by agreeing to the corrective parameter and hence avoiding being beaten half to death. Is that funny?
That's a very good way of putting it.
Is that funny to you, Phil?
No, it is not funny to me at all.
Yeah, I didn't think it was.
Phil, you understand these measures are put in place by some American women so that we can survive utilizing a corrective parameter as opposed to submitting to a full beating.
That is the difference. And I find it really, it's unsettling to hear you acquiesce to that laugh.
I'm not laughing because I think it's funny that women... Now, just hear me out, ladies, please. I'm not laughing because I think it's funny that a woman gets beaten. You're telling my audience and me, and forgive me if I'm not familiar with this.
Well, Phil, this is really what the problem is, the lack of familiarity.
That is exactly right, and that's why it's probably better that you let us talk.
Well, no, hold on, because I do have a question. You're assuming that me and my audience, we're all familiar, and I have to take a break, but that we're all familiar with this thing called the corrective parameter, and that a woman willingly submits not only to a slap in the case of you, Bobby, but in the case of Elena Lopez, a punch. A punch where the husband's hand and fist is cocked back, and you said it, he follows through after smiling and touching her shoulders and, do they exchange a kiss?
Sometimes, yes.
Yes, many times there's a kiss exchange before she stands and submits.
All right, 877-876.
You want to put them on hold?
Yes, if I put them on hold, that means I want to put them on hold, bud.
All right, I wasn't sure.
Yeah, okay. 877-876-PHIL. We'll be right back with Bobby Dooley, Steve Dooley, and Margaret Gray as well joining in this discussion of the case of the San Francisco Sheriff, Ross Mercurimi, and this domestic abuse allegation that may cost him his job in San Francisco. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
Follow through, I think, is what it says.
Yes, it does. Hold on. 877-876-PHIL, world-famous Phil Hendry Show, online at philhendryshow.com as well. Bobby Dooley, Steve Dooley joining us as we talk about this situation in San Francisco. They're very handsome couple, too, Ms. Dooley.
Oh, the sheriff and his wife?
Yeah, the sheriff, I want to get his pronounce his name properly here, Mercurimi. Sheriff Mercurimi and his wife, Elena Lopez, they're very handsome people. He's a very good-looking guy.
I think with that last name, if I'm not mistaken, and Margaret, I think there's Asian.
Yes, I think he does have some Asian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's Asian.
Okay, so there's Asian. And that doesn't, I wouldn't doubt it, that being San Francisco.
But I think it's, no, I think it's Japanese Asian.
Yes, I noticed that. The name Mercurimi, even though his first name is Ross, that's very Anglo or very American, but the last name Mercurimi sounds very Sino, or not Sino, it sounds Japo, not Japo, but what do they call it?
Japanese.
Well, is it called Japanese? I know where you're going with this, Margaret. Is it called Japanese?
Yes, it's called Japanese.
Well, the Chinese are called Sino. And the Russians are called Russo.
In a historical sense, when they're talking about the relations between the countries of China, Russia, and Japan, generally the shorthand is used, and it's a rather arcane shorthand for China, Sino, S-I-N-O. But I've only seen that used in references to the Japanese-Chinese War or the Chinese-Russian Wars of the early part of the 20th century. I've never seen it used in a contemporary context.
What does that mean?
Well, he means in present day.
Oh.
Yeah, in modern times. So I've never seen, for instance, Sino-U.S. relations. We usually say Chinese-U.S. relations.
Well, I'm just saying that Sheriff Mercurimi, I think I'm pretty sure he's, if you were to use the old school, isn't it?
Yeah, the old school would be Japo.
No, it would not be Japo. I've never heard that term used.
Why are you sounding so irritated, Mr. Hendry?
Phil, you really do sound a little... You need to back it down a notch.
Well, I'm sorry, ladies, but I find that offensive.
What is?
Japo.
We're not saying Jap.
No, they're not saying Jap.
Sorry, I didn't say Jap. I said Japo.
I don't care whether you're saying Japo. I don't like it. I find it offensive, and I don't know that there is such a term...
If I find it, will you let? If I find it, it's used. Can I? Will you let me use it?
No. What do you mean? Will I let you use it? What does that mean?
If Steve finds that it is a valid term,
I believe me, Ms. Dooley, he will not find that the term Japo.
We're getting bogged down. Can we hear more about the couple? Forget about whether Ross Mercurimi is Japo American. Well, I said it.
I will not have you using that term. I would like that to cease, please.
Mr. Hendry, your attempts at being politically correct can be very insufferable at times.
I'm not trying to be politically correct. I'm trying to be respectful to my audience, all of my audience, every one of the people that are listening to me, whether they're Japo.
There, you said it, see?
You said it, see?
You did say it, Phil.
Yeah, Mr. Hendry, you said it.
I just heard you. Okay, I said it. You're the ones that we're talking about. I mean Japanese. Japanese. Can we say Japanese?
I don't like being talked to in that tone of voice.
You know, you,
I apologize, Ms. Dooley.
Me, pardon you, I apologize.
I'm apologizing.
What about me?
I apologize to you, Margaret. I apologize that I raised my voice. I should not have done that. I just don't want that word used.
The word is Japa, right?
That's not a word. Don't use it.
Well, you just said, I didn't know what word you meant.
I...
Mr. Henry, just trying to figure out what word it is.
Japo.
All right, you're not to... He's going to yell at me.
Just say it.
Are you talking about one of the Marx Brothers? Hello?
I'm here, and no, I'm not talking about one of the Marx Brothers. You know that I'm not talking about one of the Marx Brothers.
Phil, there was a Marx Brother named Japo.
No, there was not. There was Zeppo, Harpo,
Wasn't there a Gummo?
There was a Gummo. Yes, there was. A Gummo.
But, well, it wasn't Blobbo.
Bud, stay out of this, okay?
Why?
You don't know anything about the Marx Brothers, so stay out of it.
Yeah, I do. I just saw the movie.
That was the Three Stooges, man. That wasn't the Marx Brothers.
That was the Three Stooges, Bud.
Well, why'd you tell me it's the Marx Brothers?
I thought it was the Marx Brothers.
Oh, my God. You don't know the difference between the Three Stooges and the Marx Brothers?
I hadn't seen it. I saw your friend, what's his name?
Craig Bierko. And he's I can't call him my friend. I mean, he's a nice man. He's an acquaintance.
Well, I saw him in the movie. I thought he was very, very good. But I couldn't make out what the other three were doing.
They're the Three Stooges.
Oh, my God, you spit on me.
Phil, when you get excited, I've been watching your video cast, and you say things like, there's a and spit flies.
Yeah, Mr. Henry, I've seen that.
Well, I apologize again, okay?
My God, you go, there's a Three Stooges. Look at this. It's all over me, Phil. What if you have swine flu? I'm calling my husband.
Let me call him?
All right. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Oh, Phil, don't play the martyr.
I'm not playing the martyr. Now I got Frank I got to deal with, and I still haven't gotten to the bottom of this Ross Mercurimi or Mercamiri or...
You can't even say the man's name.
Well, gee, Margaret, why don't you attend to the spittle that's on your, that I can't see on your blouse, but wherever it is, and I'll figure it out. Don't you worry.
So sarcastic. Oh, that's too bad.
Anyway, the world-famous Phil Henry Show will be right back. Was he one of the Marx Brothers?
That's right, sir.
Phil Henry.
Now, don't look at me. Yeah, Chapo was a Marx.
World-famous Phil Henry Show.
All right, Frank Gray has joined us online from his home in Santa Monica, Margaret's husband, Frank. How are you doing, Frank?
Well, I'm better than custard.
Well, we got you, Margaret.
Frank, we called you up because we wanted to ask you, when the early days how should I ask this?
Well, let me ask it.
All right.
Hi, Frank. It's Bobby Dooley.
Bobby, how are you?
I'm good. Frank, did they used to call the Japanese when they got into a war, like if they got into a war with America, did they say it was the Japo-America War?
Well, you're talking about the early days, Margaret just said it, the early days of the 20th century. And they would use terms like Sino. Phil, I think you mentioned that.
Yeah, Sino Chinese.
Yeah, for the China. And they used Russo for the Russia, or for the Russian. Now the Jap was.
Could we not use that word?
What word?
The Jap.
I thought you didn't want... I was told before I came on the air by Margaret you didn't want me to say Japo.
Yes, I don't want to say Japo, and I don't want to say Jap.
And don't. I'm the one that's saying it.
No, don't. I don't want it on my show, if you don't mind, Frank.
All right, okay. Because Margaret asked the question, was there a Marx brother by the name of Japo? And there was. And she was the handsome one. You know, Japo Marx was married to Barbara Marx. And
that was Zeppo, Frank. We are so far afield of what we were going to talk about. Bobby, you came on here to talk about the sheriff of San Francisco.
Well, I think this is important, Phil. I know that it's something that I do want to discuss, but we need to get these terms defined, because I am the mother of three high school age boys. I don't want my sons growing up being blithering idiots, eating with their hands.
Yeah, I don't want my sons eating off the plate with no utensils.
Yeah, and so...
I think your sons will be using utensils. That's got nothing to do with whether they understand historical terms.
I still want them to know what these terms are and how they relate to the sheriff of San Francisco, Ross Merkamumu. I don't know his name.
Merkamiri. I don't know.
Well, Phil, don't start bawling.
I'm not crying, but I want to get this thing back on track.
Look, Phil, I want to straighten you out here, just so you know. Jappo Marx was the brother of Harpo and...
Jappo Marx, huh?
You let me finish here.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
He's been like this all night, Frank.
God. What are you, all of a sudden a primavera? Or what do they call it, primavera?
Prima donna.
Well, what do you eat? You can eat either, I guess.
You are so vulgar, and that was so uncalled for.
Oh, give it a rest, will you? He's always on me. Anyway, Jappo Marx was married to Barbara Marx. Now, when he finally married Frank Sinatra, you know that Jappo was still alive when Barbara Marx was fiddling about with Frank Sinatra. You know that?
Yeah, I heard something about that.
You sound pushed. Don't let me bore you. If you got to get to sleep, go ahead.
No, I just, you know.
Phil, I promise we'll get back into the whole Ross Merkamumu story.
Go ahead.
Well, is it me go ahead or is it him go ahead?
You.
All right. So Barbara Marx was married to Jappo Marx. Jappo was a terrific guy. In fact, I knew her very, very briefly before she died. And one of the things about Jappo, Phil, was that she was into engines and into motors. And she was not the entertainer and the performer that her brothers were. And so, Jappo was perfectly happy working on cars. Now, her wife, Barbara... He was obviously all lady. I mean, Barbara Marx, all you got to do is take one look at him, and man, I'll tell you what, every time I see him, I want to jump all over him. And,
can I?
What are you laughing at?
Nothing.
No, you're laughing at my husband, aren't you?
Why is she laughing at me?
Don't worry, Frank. We'll talk about it when I get home, okay?
Why is she laughing?
Don't worry about it, Frank. We'll talk about it when I get home. Thank you, Frank.
Well, I wanted to stay up.
Why are you laughing? You're laughing at my husband.
Of course I'm laughing, Margaret. Of course I am. That gender confusion, sometimes it's all I can do but keep from laughing.
Oh, is that what that is? I heard him calling Barbara Marx a him.
Yes. You've known for years that Frank has that.
And it doesn't make it any less funny. He's talking about Barbara Marx. I'd be all over him. Why wouldn't I laugh at that?
Okay, Phil, let's get back to Jappo.
No, let's just not get back to Jappo. I'm not going to hear that term ever again. It wasn't a Marx brother, and it's not a valid term. Period.
So you're calling my husband a liar?
No, I'm not calling him a liar. No, I'm not. I'm calling him misinformed. You obviously know he's talking about Zeppo Marx. He's not talking about anybody named Jappo. He's talking about Zeppo. And Zeppo was the one who was married to Barbara Marx.
I happen to know, and I'm an entertainment writer, Phil, and an entertainment reporter, that Barbara Marx was married to...
Yeah?
Oh, my God, it was Zeppo.
Yeah.
Was it Zeppo?
Yeah, it was Zeppo.
Now, can I ask a question? This is going to be really stupid.
Go ahead.
Was Zeppo Marx ever the sheriff of anything?
No, he was not. Why would you ask a question like that?
Because I'm trying to pull this back on track, and I'm wondering if he was the sheriff of something.
No, Zeppo Marx was never the sheriff of anything. He was the sheriff of his own life. Now, getting back to the story here of...
Ross Merkamumu.
It's not Ross Merkamumu. Give me this.
Oh, my God, he's gritting his teeth.
Better get back away from him.
I am.
Hold on for a minute. I'm not gritting my teeth. His name is Russ Mercurimi. Now, Bobby, what do you know about this?
Well, what I know about is what I told you, that the defined parameters of his marriage to his wife, Elena, were as follows. When we are in public, you will smile for the cameras, as I smile for the cameras. And Phil, thank you very much. Phil was directed during the last commercial break to show that picture. Thank you, Phil.
You're welcome.
So that was the picture of Ross Mercurimi and his wife, Elena, smiling. Now, when she did not smile at the last photo opportunity the two of them were involved in, then came, and you know more about this, the catapult.
Yeah, the catapult, Mr. Grant, was when she didn't smile, and they got back to the hotel room, and he stood in front of her and held her shoulder and said, God, I love you so very much. Oh, I love you. And smiled at her, and then came the catapult. And
now, what's the catapult?
It's when you pull your fist back like on a catapult, and then you just lob it. You lob the fist in.
As Steve explained it to me and also demonstrated it, the fist lobs in from a distance.
What do you mean he demonstrated that? When you agree to a defined parameter, as my understanding of it goes, what happens then is that there is a... could you please close that window? Thank you. God, wow, that's very rude. There is a lobbing in, but I didn't know that he did that to you.
Yes, I asked Steve to... hold on. Telephone is the word. Do we have any other phones around here, Steve?
No.
All right. I thought we had more than... Don't we have one of those phones that doesn't plug in?
You mean a cellular?
Yeah. Do we have one of those?
In the car.
Well, go get that.
Well, never mind. We're almost out of time in the hour. So please tell me, what is the catapult?
Well, Steve, do you want to go ahead and demonstrate it for...
No, I don't want him demonstrating anything, ma'am. I don't... Look, Bobby, this is involved... These the so-called defined parameters have to do with him striking you.
Yes, but it is by agreement.
That's what you don't get, Phil.
Whether it is by agreement or not, it is still wrong.
Ain't you never heard of the Stockholm Syndrome? Mr. Henry, do you understand that in the Stockholm Syndrome, the recipient of the violent act totally agrees with its necessity?
That's true, Phil. See, he doesn't know about the Stockholm Syndrome.
Right. And
I know all about the Stockholm Syndrome, and the two of you are butchering it beyond words.
Are you kidding me? Who do you think you're talking to?
Phil, I studied this.
You're butchering it beyond words. The Stockholm Syndrome is when a person is taken hostage against their will, and they are held by a captor. And the captor is influencing this individual as a captive. They can go nowhere. They can listen to no one else. They can be influenced by no one else. And gradually, someone who is taken hostage, someone who is captured, gradually they take on a sympathetic view of their captor. They begin to feel akin to them. They begin to agree with them. This isn't something that is done willingly. This is a kind of a hypnosis. This is a kind of a mind control or brainwashing born out of having been captured.
Oh, well, that was...
Yay!
Isn't that impressive?
You know, he's always doing this.
Isn't that impressive?
Well, you know what? You can be sarcastic all you want, ladies, but that is absolutely what the Stockholm Syndrome is.
Well, no, it isn't, Mr. Henry.
Yes, tell her, tell him, or I should say tell her, if I'm frank.
Yeah, you can kid about it.
Oh my God, you sounded like Mel Tillis there. You
did he stutter?
He did.
Phil.
Oh wait.
You know you don't have very much control over your how you talk.
Yeah, your tongue sounds like it's out of whack.
You want me to fix it, Mr. Henry? Here, get your hand out of my mouth. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
He's laughing, so he's
Truth
enjoying it.
Truth is our
oh,
bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
Oh, my God.
Oh. Ew.
This is the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Henry Show, every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. As it turns out, the term Sino, signifying the country of China, is still used. It is used in, more specifically, it's used in relation to their Russian neighbors. And sometimes you actually do see the Sino-Russo term. So
in other words, the Sino-Russo is, in point of fact, operable. And that's, I think, what Bobby was trying to say. She was trying to say...
Bobby wasn't saying that. She was trying to tell me... And again, we've gotten so far off the topic of domestic violence, which is what I wanted to talk about tonight, and now we're into whether or not there's a term called JAPO. And I tried to put that aside. I tried to put that to rest, and you guys just won't... You won't let it go.
Mr. Henry, when you are trying to say that there is... no such thing as the term JAPO. You also, and you don't know that for sure.
I know that for sure.
You're willing to stake your reputation on that?
Yes, I am.
All right. Well, what about, and I know I will defer to you on the topic of Marx Brothers.
Yeah, you can do that. You can do that. And I'm not even a huge Marx Brothers fan.
You're kidding.
No.
Oh, my God.
Is that unusual?
Well, I think for a comic of Phil's generation, for a humorist of Phil's generation, not to be a Marx Brothers fan is almost tantamount to having a mental disease or a mental disorder. I mean, I know you don't, Phil, but it's very unusual. It is almost abnormal.
And where are you getting this?
You know, Phil, can I just weigh in?
No, Bob, if you don't mind. Where are you getting this?
I'm getting it from the fact that your contemporaries, whether you want to call on the of the brilliance of a Richard Lewis, I think Richard Lewis is about your age, isn't he?
Actually, Richard Lewis is older than me and way better looking.
Well, we know that.
You knew that he was older than me?
No, I didn't know that part.
I didn't either.
But you knew he was better looking than me?
Well, obviously.
Okay, that's fine.
Well, you kind of walked into that one, Mr. Henry.
Yeah, you sort of stood there for the catapult for that one, Phil.
Okay, but that's fine, and I don't want to talk about it, my looks or anything, and the Marx Brothers, and I don't care what you think of that, Margaret. I want to somehow get us back to domestic violence. Now, Bobby, you called in to talk about that in relation to the story here of Sheriff Merkamumi, whatever the hell his name is, and his wife, Elena Lopez, and I want to stick to that topic, please.
Okay, I'll be happy to do that, Phil. But I have to alert you to something.
What?
Well, you just, not Merkamumi, I know that we've all been having trouble with his name, but you just said something along the lines of, okay, well, we all is, and... There was,
yeah, you did, Mr. Henry. I didn't want to bring it up.
You did sort of lisp is. It, you said we all is going to...
I know I did not.
Oh, my God, yes, you did.
I mean, the woman heard it, Phil.
I don't care. I didn't say... I know that my grammar does not fall into we is. I use fractured grammar at times to be more relatable and to be colloquial, but I don't use it on purpose, and I know that I didn't say we is.
What does that mean, to be relatable?
Yeah, explain that one.
Explain what?
Explain what you mean by being relatable and being,
You know what? I'm not on the hot seat here, okay?
Well, Mr. Henry, it is a very interesting question.
I'm not answering that, and I'm not on the hot seat. You know what, Bobby? Thank you very much. It's been great having you on.
Oh, now he's going to hang.
That's right. That's right.
Well, that was gutless.
No, that wasn't gutless. All hour long, I've been wanting to talk about this story, and I've been hearing her asking me about JAPO. I've been hearing her asking me about telling me most recently that I said I IV.
And there you are laughing.
Well, I am laughing because it is a comedy of errors. And the closest she got to talking about this story, Ross Merkamumi.
Okay. There you sounding like me.
Yeah, you are sounding like Margo Merkamumi. That's the way Margaret Gray sound and everything.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to say anything.
I've been wanting to talk about the story, and we haven't. And the closest we got to it was when she said that Steve slaps her across the face. Some men use the catapult.
Well, Phil, this is how some of us are dealing with a horrible reality. Okay, so laugh if you will, but we've got to survive. We're the ones on the receiving end of this.
Has Frank ever hit you?
Has Frank ever hit me? That is a I love that. Oh, I love that.
Has Frank ever hit you?
What do you think?
No, he hasn't.
Bingo.
Okay, so when you say us...
I'm identifying with my sisters out there, with innumerable women out there that have had to suffer this way. Has Frank ever hit me? Phil, if Frank ever hit me, he'd be on a pallet board. And I mean, he'd be on a pallet board pushing himself along with stumps.
God!
That's right.
All right, so I guess...
Yeah, don't worry about it. I can take care... I'm not like a lot of women. A lot of women are victims, and I understand that they need... I understand that they have no choice, so I'm not judging them. I'm not judging any woman that has had to be... that has been subjected to that kind of violence. Just remember one thing. That's not Margaret Gray. Any man tries to raise his hand to me, and he will be... he will be fitted with a prosthetic if he has insurance.
Meaning he'll lose...
He will lose that limb. Whatever limb a man wants to raise to me, he loses it.
All right, so the answer is, you're nobody's chump.
I didn't say that, Phil, because, again, I don't judge women who have been subjected to that horror. I only wish that I was around when a woman is being struck by a man, because I can take care of business.
Well, I mean, what do you do?
Let me put it to you this way, Bud. I am quite proficient with a number of different cutting instruments.
Margaret, why are we being secretive here?
Well, what do you want to know?
I want to know what do you specifically, like Bud said. What are you doing? If Frank ever raised his hand to you, you say he'd be pushing himself on a pallet board, and he'd be pushing himself along with stumps. So I take it that you would remove his legs and his hands.
Yes.
I just wonder how you do that.
Wouldn't you like to know?
Well, yes, I'd like to know, but not for the... Margaret, I've never raised my hand to a woman in my life. Okay? Never. Ever, ever. Except when I was a little kid and I smacked my sister around. But then, isn't that what brothers do?
Sort of.
Well, I'm not going to get into specifics. I'm just saying that I'm identifying with a lot of women who go through that, Phil. And if a woman has to put herself in a situation where the catapult... or the precise parameters, or the defined parameter.
What is the what does that mean?
What does what mean?
What is the defined parameter?
That's when you're slapped.
And the catapult?
If you laugh at me one more time, so help me God.
All right, I'm sorry. And the catapult?
The catapult is a fist.
All right, and then I saw one other. What's the rocking chair?
You laugh.
Margaret, I'm sorry.
I'm not telling you what the rocking chair is. Be satisfied that I'm not getting some payback.
We'll be right back. Phil Henry Show.
Hey, Phil, this is Frank. I can tell you what the rocking chair is because I've used it on.
No, you haven't, you lying scum.
The hell I haven't. I used the rocking chair on.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
And welcome back here to the world famous Phil Henry Show. In our final hour, and we're into a new day here in the El Pacifico. It's now Wednesday morning. I know it's been Wednesday for you guys, many of you, elsewhere. But that means, Bud, get the garbage out.
Yeah, I did take the can out.
Yeah, is that all of it?
Yeah.
All right, so that's cool, because tomorrow's garbage day.
What is?
Tomorrow, Wednesday.
Well, it's not garbage. Oh, you mean in the neighborhood that you live in?
Yeah.
It's not... In our neighborhood, what we try to do is we try to leave our garbage out at a time and a place where you don't see cans and you don't smell them. Now, I know that probably sounds rather effete and snobbish of us, but if you think of a neighborhood as a place that you want to live in, that looks as beautiful as it is, as it feels. To drive down the street and see nothing but containers of people's waste, the waste that came from that family, it has caused Frank and I to stop speaking to some families, you know?
Why?
Well, if you think about, in other words, I don't want to be friends with someone when I see the waste they create. Do you understand what I mean?
No.
Not really.
All right. When I drive down the street and I look at, for instance, we were very good friends with the Berries. This is the family on our street. And they have a gorgeous home. And we drive down the street, and now I see containers of their filth. And I immediately want nothing to do with them.
Well, I'm going to ask you the obvious question.
Do we have containers of our filth? No, we don't. Do we have garbage? Yes, we do. Do we leave it on the street for people to see so they can say that came out of Margaret and Frank?
Came out of? I'm not talking about sewage.
Well, but the people don't differentiate. Look at what's in those cans. Margaret made that. You know, Phil, I happen to think for my age, I'm a very attractive woman. When you look at me and then you see a container of the filth I've created.
Probably turn people off.
I think it would put some people off. Yes, bud.
Okay. You know.
But what is the okay? What does that mean?
It means I don't even know where to begin with those comments, so just okay. I just told Bud, take our garbage out, or take out the garbage for the studio, because it's, you know, Wednesday, and that's where that's at, and let me just move on.
Okay.
Well, Margaret, don't be sarcastic.
Well, you blow off, Phil. You blow off, to use your terminology, things that are very important.
No, I don't blow off anything that's important. I blow off things that are trivial, and please, I want to move on, so...
Whatever.
Right, whatever. That's a good answer. All right, now, just a little bit of news here, because Dan and I were talking about this. It's very interesting. By the way, the A's defeated the Tigers tonight, I believe, game 3 of the American League Divisional Series at O.com Coliseum in Oakland, California. The Athletics played the Detroit Tigers in game... Didn't he win? What's the thing here, man? A's aching Anderson puts the hurt on Tigers, yeah. What was the final score in this thing, I guess, is anybody's guess, but nonetheless, they won.
Want me to find out?
Yeah. Why can't you guys who write news articles, I understand that you want people to read the whole article, otherwise, why did you spend all that time writing the article? I understand that. I understand that you're trying to, in some way, shape, or form, help the print media survive, even in the world of the World Wide Web, but... Frankly, I don't care. You know, if I want the score, I want the score. Now, guess what? You see this whole article that you wrote? I'm not going to read your article because you didn't give me... Had you given me the score, I might have read this article.
Oh, no, you wouldn't have.
Yes, I would have. Yes, I would have. But now I'm not reading the article. All right, now... Food labels tell consumers about the calories, nutrients, and serving size of a product. Will they want to know if their food is genetically engineered, they being you and me? Well, that question is at the heart of a California ballot initiative that seeks to require certain foods that contain genetically modified ingredients to be labeled as such. How do you guys feel about that? You know?
I want to know if it's genetically engineered.
I don't.
You don't?
No. Well, I'm not exactly sure what side to take on this. I'm not exactly...
Well, you don't know which is the liberal and...
No, that isn't it. I don't know. I haven't looked at the issue.
All right. Well, in any event, proponents say people have a right to know what they're eating. Opponents say grocery bills will be higher if the measure is passed, that measure being one that would require foods that are genetically modified to be labeled as such. Genetically engineered crops have existed for more than a decade. Most of the biotech crops are used for animal feed or as ingredients in processed foods, including cookies, cereal, potato chips, and salad dressing. The federal government and many scientists have said such foods are safe to eat. Proposition 37 at a glance. What it would do, it would require most genetically engineered processed foods and produce sold in supermarkets and other retailers to be labeled as such. GMO foods, I don't know what that stands for, but we'll get to it. GMO, genetically modified, yeah. GMO foods also will be prohibited from using the phrase natural on their labels. Meat, dairy, alcohol, and restaurant foods are exempt. The supporters are consumer groups and the organic food industry. They say the measure gives shoppers more information about what they're eating and allows them to decide whether they want to buy food made with genetically modified ingredients.
All right, I support it.
Well, why?
Don't give me that look. I support it.
Why? Because it's consumers.
No, because the organic food industry supports it. And so...
Oh.
What does that mean?
I don't know. It's just some people...
Some people what? I want you to define that.
Meaning you, Margaret, just go with the flow. Whatever the liberals and the, you know...
Well, you sound like such an old curmudgeonly conservative.
I'm not. But, I mean, I try to have a more informed opinion than you, which is...
Well, let's see. Who do the organic food people support? Okay, I support that.
I don't think I sounded quite like a gay man when I said it, did I?
A little bit. So, consumer groups in the organic food industry say the measure gives shoppers more information about what they're eating and allows them to decide whether they want to buy food made with genetically modified ingredients. Those who oppose it are, here you go, agribusiness, food producers, pesticide companies, and retailers. They say grocery bills would increase if the initiative succeeds. They also say it could lead to frivolous lawsuits against grocery stores, which would have to ensure proper labeling under the initiative. Now, let me just tell you why I support this measure, and I've supported it since Dan and I talked about it about 3 weeks ago. Number one, agribusiness says that grocery bills would increase if the initiative succeeds. Well, that means that that's a for sure they will increase because agribusiness has decided that the grocery bills will increase. They've already basically said, and it's kind of a threat, your grocery bills are going to go up. The other thing is frivolous lawsuits. Aha. Let's talk about the frivolous lawsuit. Frivolous lawsuits against grocery stores, which would have to ensure proper labeling under the initiative. Otherwise, people would sue if it wasn't labeled properly as organic. Okay. There is, for instance, ladies and gentlemen, the possibility that if a lawsuit is frivolous, that it's not heard. Now, that is something that has nothing to do with whether the food industry is required to label genetically altered foods. That has to do with our courts and whether some dumbass judge or a judicial system somewhere in a state or even federally says, sure, we'll hear your lawsuit, when you know full damn well it's bullcrap. Now, I'm talking about a lawsuit that is filed by a citizen because the genetically modified food wasn't labeled, and therefore there were damages or there was something happened, you know, harm befell the person. Now, you got to me, that's a very specific thing. And,
so you're saying what? You're saying...
I'm saying that that's not the problem of the people that are promoting this initiative. That's the problem of any court hearing this. I don't know why half of these courts hear these lawsuits. Well, it's a frivolous lawsuit. What the hell are you even entertaining it for? What are you suing for? They didn't have the thing labeled. Okay. And you were claiming what? Well, because they didn't label it as genetically modified food, I have an allergy and I have a doctor's prescription here that tells me that I'm allergic to genetically modified wheat and they didn't have a label and I had a thing and my head blew up and I exploded. Okay, I think we'll hear that lawsuit because some actual, you know, harm came to you. I mean, physical harm, you know, you were injured. There was an injury, and I think that there's probably damages that would accrue. Now you're suing, and what happened? Well, they didn't have a label on there. And, okay, when, what are you, well, they just didn't have the label, sir. I mean, that's against the law. Okay, we understand it's against the law, and the store has been fined, and but what do you got to do with it? Well, I'm just suing on behalf of a consumers group that they didn't. Now, any judge that hears that,
well, I think that you would want to be able to hear that suit because if that individual represents a consumer's group of people that are allergic, you know.
No, I don't know. No, I don't.
Why?
Because that sounds like a load of hooey. It sounds like somebody that's looking for a payday. Oh, well, you know, Your Honor, I represent people that are allergic to this kind of stuff. Well, did anybody get sick? Well, we have a guy in Oklahoma who came down with an illness in 1932. Wait a minute. We're talking about, within the time span of this law being passed and foods being labeled, has anybody gotten to say, oh, well, yes, sir, I think, but she isn't allowed to travel, and she may have a, you know.
Well, what are you saying, that people will try to defraud the court?
Well, of course they will. every day in this country, that kind of bullcrap is happening. And every day in this country, there are lawyers that are attempting to. And every day in this country, there are good lawyers and good judges who are attempting to not let that stuff happen. The frivolous lawsuit, that term, has turned into something so frightening and so odious to people that all you have to do is say those words, frivolous lawsuit, and people immediately will just say, aha, now I know what it's about. Okay, I'm voting, you know, against it. But I would simply say that, you know, that's not the fault of this law. That's the fault of courts even entertaining these lawsuits. All right, we'll be right back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Romney says abortion wouldn't be on the agenda, but campaign waivers. What does that mean? We'll find out when we come back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Maybe it doesn't mean anything. Maybe it means something. I don't know. Maybe it's a last-minute, last-ditch effort for Romney to try to woost more liberal votes. I don't know. I don't care. And whatever.
Truth very well is our it, bitch.
Thank you.
The Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Now, here, there's Linda Hogan. What is she? Well, the Hogan family are having problems. We were looking at some of the hot videos here on online, some of the videos of the...
Some of the celebrity stuff.
And one of the things we were looking at was the Christina Hendricks. She of Margaret?
She's in Mad Men.
Mad Men. And Christina Hendricks stopped this interview with Australian television. Can you tell us more?
Yes, Phil, Christina Hendricks was being interviewed by Australia's Channel 4. And in the interviewer, Christina in that case is the interviewee, and the interviewer said, "You are one of the world's great full-figured women." Well, Christina looked at him, and she looked at her, the individual from the studio that was there handling her, and by handle her,
yeah, I know what you mean by that.
Go ahead, handler.
Would you tell them to shut up,
bud?
Not handle her as in manhandle her. To help her with the interview. And then she looked at the interviewer. Well, naturally, she cut it short.
Now, why?
Why? Because he called her full-figured.
Okay, see, this is the goes to the heart of what I'm talking about. Full-figured is not an insult.
It's not an insult to men, to women, to us. It is very insulting.
Well, you guys have got a problem. Now, hold on, Margaret. Just hold on. You know, women have really got to pull it together a little bit here because you guys are half crazy with you. And I know, yes, I know, that a great many women would say, well, you men are the cause of this because you're the guys that have sort of created the standard of beauty. I counter by saying... we may have created it, and perhaps we propel it, but you sustain it. And especially the way women talk about each other, men have no choice in a lot of instances but to, you know, when I was a kid, I've grown up my whole life loving women with big asses, okay?
Yeah.
But when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, I was embarrassed to even talk about that with my male friends because I was afraid of being, you know, laughed at or, you know, in those days, guys used to talk about pig parties and stuff like that.
Well, Phil, excuse me, but what do the women have to do with this?
Well, what I'm saying is, you know, what do the women have to do with it? I'm saying that I guess you're right. I guess it was all, you know, but I will tell you this. What bothers me.
No, but hold on for a minute, because I just want to savor this moment. I'm right. You're wrong. I'm right. You're wrong.
Margaret.
No, hold on. I want to savor the moment. I'm right, you're wrong. Bud, Robert, you're witnesses.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Oh, well, big deal.
No, yes, it is a big deal. It is a big deal because I am right and you're wrong.
All right, well, here's where you're wrong. You women, like this Christina Hendricks, she's called full-figured. That's a compliment. In the world of men, in the world of most men, 90% of men, healthy men, that's a compliment. If some men don't think it's a compliment, those guys are, you know, I don't know what to say about those guys. I don't think they're normal, to be honest with you.
You're kidding. You think a man that likes a nice, slender woman isn't normal?
No. I think a man that likes a nice, slender woman to the exclusion of a beautiful, full-figured woman isn't normal. I think a guy that can't even appreciate how beautiful a full-figured woman is, there's something wrong with a guy, yeah. Yeah. So,
oh my God. Oh my God. Get Frank on the phone, please.
Yeah, all right. Better wait a minute.
What is so weird about that?
That is absolutely... Are you kidding? A man that doesn't appreciate a full-figured woman is abnormal.
Yes, 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 yes. Now, let me finish what I'm saying. Christina Hendricks stopped that interview and said she thought that man was being rude. Now, we live in a society that supposedly, because I don't know, from any given day, I have no idea, but supposedly I'm told that anorexia is just so terrible, and we don't want our daughters and our teenage, you know, our girls, we don't want our wives, we don't want the women in our lives, we don't want them suffering from anorexia. That's what they tell me, okay?
Well, what do you mean that's what they tell you?
No, hold on. So I say that's what they tell me. Then they turn around and, well, you know, full figured. Hey, woo, woo, woo. You know, watch it there with that full figured, and watch it there with the fact that Mariah Carey's got a great big ass, and watch it there about the big ass on Kim Kardashian. You know,
well, Phil.
No, not well, Phil, nothing. Now, which is it? And People Magazine, you bastards, and people like you. Yeah, on the one hand, you got the you got your front page article, your feel good article about anorexia and oh, our daughters and this and that, so you can feel good about yourselves, and so you can say that you did the right thing, and then you're back to joking and pointing fingers at and making fun of women who have full figures. Now along comes a beautiful woman, Christina Hendricks. Are you kidding me?
Yes, she's pretty hot. I mean, for a gingerhead.
Yeah, I was gonna say she's a gingerhead, man.
So what if she's got red hair? I think she's gorgeous. Anyway,
well, I will give you this facially and from the breasts up. Yes.
Oh, from the breasts up.
Sorry about your big, you know what, Phil, but it doesn't make it.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you very much, Margaret. I'm getting my. I don't need any beauty advice from you. Okay.
You don't need to. What does that mean?
Yeah. What are you thinking of being? Are you thinking of having getting one installed?
Getting one installed.
He's being polite.
A sex change.
Do I look like I'm getting a sex change?
No.
Getting one installed. I'm talking about Christina Hendricks is a gorgeous woman. She's got a fantastic body.
Oh, come on.
She's got a fantastic body. She's got a fantastic body. And I don't know whether it is there's not a guy in her life telling her that enough. I don't know whether there isn't a man in her life telling her how beautiful she is, and she hasn't heard the term full-figured in the context of it being a beautiful thing, that she gets upset and stops an interview. There's something wrong in that woman's life, I'm telling you.
Well, Phil, there's nothing wrong in that woman's life that eating a little fat-free cottage cheese won't, you know what I'm saying, and having carrots.
What are you saying?
Phil, there's nothing wrong with Christina Hendricks that a 20-calorie Jenny O bacon slice won't cure. Thank you.
So she needs a diet.
I didn't say that.
Well, you're giving her the fat-free cottage cheese and the 20-calorie Jenny O bacon slice.
Is that the turkey bake?
Yes, that's turkey bake. That's TB.
Oh, well, isn't that great? I'm glad the two of you are so conversant. That woman, she's going to turn into an anorexic. What are you going to do when you see the news about Christina Hendricks turning into an anorexic and she's dead? Dead.
How dare you say something like that? You're saying it like it's my fault.
Yeah, it would be your fault. In part, it would be your fault. You and all the other asses out there that made her feel being full. Congratulations to the Australian TV guy who said that. It's not a bad thing to say, sir. And it was a great question. And you are, you know, so there you go.
And what?
And he's my hero, whoever he is.
Yeah, let's find his name.
Yeah, I don't know who he is, but he's my hero. We'll be right back. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Don't forget, we're online at philhendryshow.com. Live streaming video of our show right now at philhendryshow.com. Also, the Lion download is available.
Phil Hendry. World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Well, I have some news. Now, I don't know. But this is the week, definitely, that we are going to be Apple compatible. So if you have an iPhone or an iPad, and you are a subscriber to the Phil Hendry Show website, this week, your Apple compatibility is established. It is a reality. And that means that you'll be able to watch our videos on demand. You will be able to access all of our media on demand with your iPad and your iPhone at philhendryshow.com. It's been a long time coming. You guys were very, very patient. Really, seriously, our backstage pass members are very patient. But we take things very methodically around here. We don't cut no deal with nobody until we know what's up, you know.
Right.
And we found a very good company that is providing the streaming. And they're providing the service, that is, to our liking. And the price is right, you know. One of the things that I just saw a commercial on TV about UPS. It was about entrepreneurial businesses. In other words, we're living in a day and age where people are working for themselves more and more. And I think that in the world of new media, if you will, you people that run the Akamai's and the Amazons, you people that provide the streaming and so forth for websites, I think you should take this into consideration a little bit. Instead of holding out for the big six-figure deal, you know, instead of holding out for the company that's going to lay $1 million on you per year, there's plenty of businesses that are smaller than that, but have got cash on the barrelhead, are making money, and are, you know, perfectly happy to do business with you. But what we found when we were out and we were shopping and we were looking for bids to provide us with this ability to make people's Apple products compatible with the media that we had on our site, we found a lot of companies that were, we only deal with the $1 million a year clients. Well, good for you, man. You go ahead. You know, I hope you're out of business in 6 months. You know, and something tells me you might be, because how many of those people do you think are out there? And in the meantime, you got thousands and thousands of businesses in this country, tens of thousands of businesses in this country, that are much smaller and can use those services and are making a profit and can afford to pay, you know, a reasonable fee. I don't know, you know, a whole bunch of companies like that are even better in many ways than getting some big ass account like Major League Baseball. You know,
how much do you think Major League Baseball pays?
Major League Baseball probably pays a lot of bread to have the sophisticated media that they have. There's no question that whoever provides the streaming for Major League Baseball, NFL, National Hockey League, the NBA, you know, they're making a lot of money. Well, guess what, man? They got lucky. You didn't, Charlie. And you know what? Major League Baseball and the NFL, those people are so big that your ass is liable to be out the door as soon as your contract is up with them, because they're always going to be looking for a better price. So don't think that there's any loyalty there, man.
Yes, but you know something, Phil? It is a pretty fat payday.
Well, it's a fat payday, and that's... God bless them. All I'm saying is, as these people turn their nose up, companies that are the size of mine or even smaller are finding options, and we've found our option, okay? As a matter of fact, we've found more than one option, and perfectly happy to be in business with our people. And what is the name? I don't want to mention the name of the company because it may not be that company. I don't know. What have we been doing, bud?
Well, it's been a bunch of them. It's been like three or four, but I think we're inking a deal with them, you know, pretty soon.
Okay, so in any event, I say that because I was talking about the fact that this is the week that we will have Apple compatibility. Also, our episode 47 has dropped of the Free Phil Hendry podcast. Episode 48 is on the way, and it's a good one. It's Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills, and this is one where I don't know what this one is, man, but we've got Ted Bell dropping tomorrow as episode 48 of the Free Phil Hendry podcast. This week as well, Jack I. Gagner begins his weekly show, Lions Lion. It will be a call-in sports talk show. It starts tomorrow night, or if you will, tonight. This is Wednesday. It starts tonight at 6 o'clock Pacific. That would be 8 o'clock Central. 9 o'clock Eastern on the Phil Hendry Show website, right here at Phil TV in HD. Jack I. Gagner and Lions Lion. And then just one more note, the Milwaukee Lions game against the Portland Logs is now online and available for download. It was Monday's game, and that is available. And I don't think that the Lions are blacked out. The Lions will be on next week as well. They're at home against the L.A. Tan. And I don't know. I think there's a blackout in a couple of weeks, Bud. You might want to check the schedule. So that's it. That's our news. That's our website. The owner of the children's show Sesame Street, the owners, have asked the Obama campaign to pull down an ad released on Tuesday that shows an image of Big Bird and mocks Republican nominee Mitt Romney for holding up the popular children's character as a symbol of unnecessary government spending. We've approved no campaign ads, and as is our general practice, have requested that both campaigns remove Sesame Street characters and trademarks from their campaign materials, said Sesame Workshop, a nonprofit educational organization that produces and owns the show, in a statement. Obama campaign spokesman Ben LeBolt said the request was under review. The ad is airing on national cable and broadcast television and time slots devoted to comedy shows, the campaign said.
Why won't they do what they want to do?
If
they said it's copyright protected.
Well, here's why.
It may have to do with news, if it's newsworthy.
Well, here's the thing. Romney said something about Sesame Street or PBS or some jazz. Obama, in his campaign ad, is using Romney, and Romney talking about it. So as such, that is a compelling public interest. But, and here's the big but, other than, you know.
The big buts you were talking about.
Yeah.
There's the big but other than Kim Kardashian. Yeah.
That's okay, bud. It wasn't that funny.
No.
Well, Phil said it wasn't funny. You're not comically qualified to do...
Excuse me, but I'm an entertainment writer.
Yeah, but still...
Okay, take it easy, will you?
Will if?
Okay. And so what I'm saying is that the Obama campaign is reacting to what Romney said... So that is a legitimate reaction. However, the use of a copyright-protected mark, or I should say a mark that is a trademark, or any copyright-protected material in the ad, unless it was part of the news story. See what I'm saying? So if Romney said on television, I think Big Bird sucks, and he had a picture of Big Bird, right?
Yeah.
All right. That is a... The Obama campaign would have a right to legitimately use that. That is a legitimate news clip. It is a compelling public interest. Okay. But if Romney said, I think Big Bird is a jackball, and the Obama campaign slipped in a picture of Big Bird...
Then that is the... Okay, that I didn't understand that part.
Yeah, that I think, as I understand the law, I think that violates the trademark. Using the clip of Romney saying what he said is okay because he said it publicly. It is of a compelling public interest, and he said it, and there he is saying it. But if you're adding in a trademarked image such as Big Bird or anything that is a copyright protected, then you're adding it. It wasn't part of the original story, then that may be the problem. At last week's presidential debate, Mr. Romney said he would end the subsidy to the public broadcasting service as an example of spending cuts he would make to reduce the deficit. House Republicans passed a budget last year that included cuts to PBS. I love Big Bird, he said, but I'm not going to keep on spending money on things to borrow money from China to pay for. The Obama campaign has used the statement to cast Mr. Romney as the nemesis of Sesame Street characters. Speaking at a campaign event in Los Angeles on Sunday, President Barack Obama said his opponent was cracking down on Big Bird. Elmo's made a run for the border, the president said.
I thought that was very funny. Cracking down on Big Bird, are you putting me on? That's beautiful. Beautiful material.
Yeah, okay.
It is.
Yeah, it's pretty beautiful material, I agree.
Oh, well, okay, comedy writers of America, that's beautiful material.
Phil, you know something? You're not the arbiter of all that's funny, okay?
I know, I just... All right. The campaign's 30-second ad suggests Mr. Romney is targeting children's programming rather than legitimate threats to the economy. Big Yellow, a menace to our economy, the narrator says. Mitt Romney knows it's not Wall Street. You have to worry about it's Sesame Street. Now, a statement on Sesame Street's website says Sesame Street would not exist were it not for PBS and its local stations, which is the distribution system for Big Bird and friends, to reach all children across the U.S., particularly the low-income children who need us most. We welcome a serious conversation, one that does not include Sesame Street characters, but real solutions for our country, said Kirsten Kukowski, a spokeswoman for the Republican National Committee. All right, so what she was doing there is she was taking the side of Sesame Street, which asked that these images not be used. Now, the owners of the children's show, they said they asked the Obama campaign to pull down the ad that shows an image of Big Bird and mocks Mitt Romney. So I guess they did, yeah.
So they were singling out what Romney had said, and they used Big Bird to illustrate what Romney said. I don't see what why that's a problem.
Yeah, that's an infringement on a copyright.
The only reason why you're saying that, Bud, is because you like Mitt Romney.
No, I do like Mitt Romney, but Obama doesn't know he's infringing on it.
You don't even know what that means.
Yeah, I do. Yes, I do. What he did is he put a picture of Big Bird. It's against the law.
It's not against the law to have a picture of Big Bird, for God's sake. What happened was this. Mitt Romney was talking about Big Bird, and President Obama put an ad out, rightfully so, saying that Mitt Romney wanted to destroy Big Bird and everything that it represents, and put a picture there.
No, he didn't say he wanted to destroy Big Bird.
Phil, for all intents and purposes, Mitt Romney said he wanted to throw Big Bird, let's be honest, in a stew pot.
No, he didn't say that.
Let's be honest.
Yeah, Mr. Henry said he didn't say that.
I don't care what Mr. Henry said. Retard.
Oh, did you hear that?
Yeah, I did, man. I heard that.
I didn't say anything.
Yes, you did. I heard you say retard.
You're a liar, Henry. You're a liar.
You're calling me a liar. Did you not say that, or did you?
Not the way you said it. I didn't go...
How did you say it, then?
I'm not going to say.
Yeah, you did. You said it.
No, I... Can we get back to the point?
No, this is the point. You called Bud a retard.
No, I did not.
I heard you.
The way you characterized, you went, I did not say it that way.
Oh, so you did say it.
I said, first of all, you know how I say it. I say it so it's inoffensive. I said retard. I did not say, oh, there you go, Phil. When you're wrong, it's so difficult for you to admit that you're wrong.
How is retard any less offensive?
It just is. Trust me on this. You don't want to look. You don't want to make me mad.
I love it when I get emails like that from people. That's fantastic. I got an email from a guy once. You don't want to make me mad. Nothing makes me laugh harder than somebody sending me an email that says, "You don't want to make me mad."
Some guy do that, you?
Yeah, we turned it over to the FBI. All right,
the FBI.
Yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, the FBI, they want all that now. Did you know that?
You're kidding.
No, I'm not kidding. Anytime anybody in the media, like me, anytime we get anything that is remotely threatening, there is a website. There is a special website that the FBI has set up in conjunction with another federal agency, and they want to see it all because what they're doing is they are actively involved in researching, first of all, what the online atmosphere is, separating terrorist threats from run-of-the-mill cyber threats, from just a lot of hot air, this and that. And then they also want to find out, they're doing research on how do you track down these anonymous individuals, some of whom use multiple email addresses, some of whom use multiple handles on these email accounts. And so they have made the public aware of this resource, and my attorney told me about this. I didn't even know that it existed.
Well, it's a site online.
Yeah, it's a site online. It's a form that you fill out, and you then submit whatever email you have received that contains any kind of a threat or anything like that. So we're going to break here, but you got to watch, when you get angry, and I understand people get angry, you got to watch what you say, even in an email, because you may think it's not going to come back on you, and more these things do. All right, we're going to take a break. The world famous Phil Hendry Show, we're running late. I apologize. Big Bird is safe. No, they don't want to throw his ass in a stew pot, okay?
Well, no, I said Mitt Romney does.
No, he doesn't. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth.
Stealing hell with that
big
boiled chicken.
The Phil Hendry
what?
Show.
I said I'd be one hell of a boiled chicken.
Boiled chicken. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
So I didn't.
Yes, you did, and I'll tell you, if you want to die, just say you want to die, and I'd be more than happy to help you with that, bud. But don't lie and say you were talking about the football game.
What happened?
Tell him.
I said that the Trojans wish the Trojans would win better.
Oh, what a lion. He said, are you going home to use your Trojan Twister?
No, I didn't.
Bud, are you going home to use your Trojan Twister? It's got nothing to do with I wish the Trojans would have won better.
I didn't say...
Yeah, you did, man. I heard it.
You see, Bud, the only reason why you're still alive, the only reason why you're still breathing is that man right there.
Margaret, don't talk that way.
I'm not going to sit here and listen to him talk about look me up and down and talk about Trojan Twister.
I didn't look you up and down. You think I want to throw up and everything?
Well, you dirty...
Hey!
Now I understand.
Understand what?
Why Robert goes after him all the time.
I ain't gone after him a couple weeks, Mr. Dennis, that he'd fire me.
Yeah, Robert doesn't come after me no more. He knows what's good for him.
Yeah.
Hey! What do I got to kick everybody's ass?
Tell him to apologize.
Bud, apologize for that Trojan Twister crack.
I didn't look her up and down.
All right, apologize for it.
I'm sorry.
I didn't hear that.
I'm sorry.
What?
I'm sorry.
One more.
All right, Margaret, we heard him. What are you doing, man? What is that about, anyway?
The thing was on TV. I go, look, there's a Twister. I said, Margaret, hey, look, the Trojan Twister. And it's on a sale price. And that's all I remember. I blacked out.
What do you mean you blacked out?
He's using that excuse.
I did. I blacked out.
What does that mean you blacked out?
I forget what I did next.
I'll tell you what you did next. You looked me up and down and said, hey, Margaret, it's on sale.
No, I remember doing that, but I don't remember looking you up and down. Maybe I blacked out in that part.
Yeah, you know what, Bud? You're full of crap, okay? You blacked out. You know, sometimes it's not funny. Sometimes these crude references are not funny. And it's sad that some people think that they are, okay? Now then, Thursday is a very special day because guess what? Thursday there's going to be the vice presidential debate. And it may well be an interesting debate because both of the vice presidential candidates are Roman Catholics. Steeped in their faith, they disagree sharply on issues of crucial importance to the church, as do voters in Iowa and nationwide. In this particular article, we're talking about the divide coming into sharp focus on Thursday when the two vice presidential candidates, Joe Biden, who is our vice president, and his challenger, Representative Paul Ryan, meet in Danville, Kentucky for their only debate of the fall campaign. When they step onto the stage, it'll spotlight a first in American history. Never before have both major party tickets for the White House featured a Roman Catholic. It would be hard to find better representatives of the two poles of American Catholicism. Both men are deeply steeped in their faith, yet they disagree on issues of crucial importance to the church. Abortion, health care, the government's role in caring for the poor. Health care. You know, I don't understand... why healthcare is of crucial importance. I understand that people being healthy is of crucial importance to the church. Taking care of people who cannot take care of themselves is of crucial importance to the church. I just don't get where this thing called healthcare is of crucial importance to the church. That's what, you know...
Well, because... what do you mean?
Never mind. Never mind. It's like saying, an anti-ballistic missile treaty is of crucial importance to the church, as opposed to saying stopping war is, I don't know.
Phil, go get some rest.
Yeah, I will. The world-famous Phil Hendry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and Phil Hendry. We're online at philhendryshow.com. Please do join us for our videocast, our next videocast of our show at philhendryshow.com. Also, the Milwaukee Lions are now available for download at philhendryshow.com. That is the Milwaukee Lion podcast. So, until tonight, let that be a lesson to you.
Phil Hendry.